This is Jeremy Walker, and you are listening to That's What He Said. You may know the Bible's stories, but have you ever thought about what it would be like to hear what people in the Bible heard and to go through what they went through? As you join us today, we're going to go beyond the Bible's stories as you've heard them and delve into the minds and emotions of various Bible characters, considering the concepts of what would it be like to experience the things that they experienced. And our hopes are to enrich the understanding of the great heroes of the faith so we can better understand the Bible stories which we hear and also teach. That's What He Said is a production of the Christian Reconstruction 101 website at christianreconstruction101.com. And Christian Reconstruction 101, the website, podcast, and affiliations are brought to you by the GCS Apprenticeship Program. If you or someone you know is interested in Christian education, if they are a single young man or woman or family, you can check out the GCS Apprenticeship Program, which seeks to train young men and women and families to own and operate their very own Christian schools and to become successful Christian school teachers. You can check out their website at gcsapprenticeship.com. We're going to go ahead and get started here today on That's What He Said. Today we're going to be discussing the dowry, David, and a present of foreskins. If you're unfamiliar with the concept of the dowry, we're going to discuss that a little bit. We're going to be discussing David as in King David from the Bible, David and Goliath. And in particular, we're going to be discussing the circumstance where he is given a task, basically collecting the foreskins of Philistines. It all has to do with part of becoming part of King Saul's family and being able to marry one of his daughters, which is Michal. So we're going to go ahead and get started here today. We want to kind of delve into some of the characters that I don't think most people have discussed or the circumstance, which I think most people kind of gloss over. It's not really a glamorous type of story that's in the Bible. And in fact, it's one of those stories that you probably won't hear unless you read it for yourself. But I'm going to go ahead and read it for you. The circumstance happens in 1 Samuel 18. And we're going to start reading in verse 14 all the way down to verse 30. So you're going to have to bear with me as we read this real quick. 1 Samuel 18, 14 and following. Quote, "And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all of Israel and Judah loved David, because he went out and came in before them. And Saul said to David, Behold my elder daughter Merab, her will I give thee to wife. Only be thou valiant for me, and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul said, Let not my hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. And David said to Saul, Who am I, and what is my life, or my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king? And it came to pass at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should be given to David, that she was given to Adriel the Meholathite to wife. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in the one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servant, saying, Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servants spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, Seemeth it you a light thing to the king's son-in-law, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, On this manner spake David. And Saul said, Thus shall you say to David, The king desireth not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines, to be avenged of the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. And when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law, and the days were not expired. Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full tale to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass, after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. Unquote. Well, that kind of sums up the story right there in 1 Samuel 18:14 through 30. The story is the concept of King Saul is afraid of David. If you're unfamiliar with the story, you should go back and read the entire story of 1 Samuel, and specifically with David's life, to kind of get a better understanding of it. But just to get us started here, let's talk about the dowry. This podcast is to be kind of candid, kind of relaxed a little bit. We want to give a new perspective on things. Hopefully, give the listener something to think about. One of the things you need to understand about the dowry itself is that there's very limited information about it in the Bible itself. You can do a word search. A couple different things you'll come up with is the concept of dowry. You'll come up with the concept of a bride's price. Lots of different things governing the concept of marriage and the giving of marriage. You have stories like the one where Abraham is sending, of course, his servant to find a wife for Isaac, which was Rebekah, sent gold necklaces and bracelets and other things for her. You have many different aspects in the Bible that talk about the dowry or the bride's price. There's other situations where in the Bible where a man might seduce a woman and a young woman who is single, and as he seduces her and she gives in to him physically, he then is responsible to pay for her as far as the dowry is concerned and to take her to wife. He has to marry her, unless, of course, the father is completely against it. And then he says, no, you cannot marry my daughter. This would be somebody who has, you know, seduced his daughter, and she, of course, is given into it willingly. And this kind of concept, if the father refuses to accept this man as a potentially good husband, considering he's already shown himself to be a not a very good person for seducing a woman in the first place, he then can say no. The young man, of course, then has to still pay a dowry or a bride's price for the woman, but he does not get the wife. So there's lots of different circumstances like that in the Bible, but the dowry itself isn't overly discussed. But I think it needs to be something that should be resurrected within our Christian communities. Well, the reason for that is a couple of different reasons. We've kind of accepted the idea of the romantic idea, the French novel, and the idea is that all you need is love, and that's all you need. In fact, there's a song, Love is All You Need. But the idea of the dowry is something that shows a bit more, something concrete, something tangible. It's not as something as simple and fleeting as a person saying, I love you, or having physical lust towards somebody, or emotional love towards someone, but something very concrete and something very physical. My wife and I work in a school, and we work with the general public. One of the number one problems you run into is people, they kind of start out with this idea, romantic idea of love, marriage, this kind of an idea. But what it really comes down to is in the end, they know that everything comes down to money. Everything costs money. You have to have clothes, you have to have food, you have to have a place to live. Everything costs money. And even the people who are not together, maybe they just have children together, but they were never together, maybe they were divorced, whatever the situation might be. But it comes down to money. You always hear the women complaining about how the man does not pay what he's supposed to pay. Everybody understands the world takes money to live in. And for some reason, we don't discuss this concept at the beginning of people even thinking about the concept of marriage or, of course, having physical intimacy with each other. For the people who are non-Christians, they just think they can just have physical intimacy with just because they want to. That's the lust aspect of it. Or we're going to get married because we love each other. But love and emotion is a very fickle thing. But the concept of responsibility shows itself in what you do. Are you hardworking? Do you have money? Do you have savings? Are you frugal? Are you responsible? And a person's ability to use and spend and save money is a concrete aspect of their life, a very concrete aspect of their life. So I think that part of what we're going to discuss today, just in brief, is the concept of the dowry itself isn't really spelled out overtly throughout the Bible. In fact, there's a lot of discussion and concept about what it is and how it was used. A lot of times it was one of those things where it was just a cultural thing that was used, and God did utilize different aspects of different cultures throughout the Bible. But the dowry itself needs to be resurrected for the fact that in the Christian communities, our young men and women should be concerned about taking care of themselves. In fact, in the Bible, in the New Testament, it says that a man who does not care for his own is worse than an infidel and has denied the faith. And so if you want a kind of a barometer, an idea of what a person is going to do, if a person is going to take care of their responsibilities, their wife, their children, these kinds of an idea, then the bank account is a very good barometer for that. If this person has money, if this person is highly in debt, how they've spent their money up until now, if they are, of course, a person who's just collected lots of debts but hasn't paid them off, if they're a person who has not saved any money whatsoever. But there's a lot of aspects to it that also the dowry is weak in. Myself, whenever I got married, I was age 19, raised in the Southern Baptist Church, the concept of a dowry, the concept of how important a bank account was not there. And so whenever I got married, I did not have the concept of a dowry of any sorts whatsoever. I had $200 to my name. I had a small little beat-up Toyota car, and that's it. That's all I had. There was nothing there as far as monetary value, except the fact that, of course, I had no debts at all. So the concept of the dowry is not something that's set in stone. It's not something that's necessarily in the Bible laid out. It tells you exactly how much it is. There have been people who have touted the concept of 3 years of wages. And when we sit down and break it down, if a person, of course, makes $8.50 an hour, roughly minimum wage, and they do that for 40 hours a week for 52 weeks, and they do it for 3 years, and then, of course, you take out the concept of the tithe, so 10% of that money, and then the idea of roughly in America today, people are in about a 30% tax bracket across the board. If you take out all the different taxes that people have to pay, roughly 30% tax bracket over the top of all that you're going to have to pay out. So roughly an individual, say a single male, only gets really 60% of their money, roughly, that they actually make. So if you're making $8.50 an hour and you're having to give about 40% of your money up for tithe and or for the state for taxes, then you're only getting 60% of that entire amount itself to take home. And I ran some of the figures and did the math on it. And if somebody was going to follow this concept of the dowry and 3 years of wages, which I think is a fair idea as far as what the Bible says, it's roughly about $30,000. Now, $30,000 doesn't sound, when you stop and think about it, like it's going to be overly complicated to do. And it's actually not. My children are starting to get older now. I have 5 boys and 6 girls. And the concept of the dowry is something I've started to implement within my own family. They start to, when my kids are old enough to start earning paychecks and things like that, we start to help them save immediately. In the concept of the tithe and things like that, it comes out of their paychecks, of course, along with the taxes. But we also automatically help them save 50% of their money in a bank account, and of course allow them to utilize the rest of the money of their account so they can learn the concept of using and spending money, making wise decisions and choices about expenditures and whatnot. Now, as soon as my children turn 18, the idea will be then to give them access to all of their funds. Hopefully by the age of 18, we've instilled in our children, I hope that's the case, the concept of responsibility and wise spending, frugality, and savings. Now, my children are on track that hopefully whenever they are ready and marriageable age, especially the boys is what we're talking about here, that they should be able to have the amount that we're talking about here if they are, of course, wise and frugal and responsible. Now, I'm just putting this out there based off the basic concept of what's generally acceptable as far as some people will talk about the dowry and what's it cost and all the rest. There have been other people who have discussed the idea of general savings for a family and what is it that a family generally would need to have in savings for its own personal protection. Some people say 1 year's wages. This would mean if there is for some reason, unforeseen thing where a person loses their job, they still have a year's worth of finances to work with. Pay mortgage, pay rent, pay the bills, whatever it might be. And this allows them time to gather themselves, to get back on track, get another job if it might be, or if their business is slow, to get back on track where that might be concerned. And this is just an economic concept that I've heard before, is somebody having 1 year's wages as a safety buffer for themselves. Now, the majority of people in America do live paycheck to paycheck. But as Christians, we should not be doing so if at all possible that we can't. And if we follow God's commandments, if we work hard, we're frugal, that should be a very easy and attainable goal. For a single man who is still living in his home, hopefully, which is there's no really any reason to move out, I don't see it to be very complicated at all for them to be frugal and responsible to start saving their money to make this a viable concept. Now, as we're talking here, I think it's something that Christian communities should resurrect, but I don't think that it is something that is set in stone, per se. And I think that each case has to be taken case by case, not that a person should reject somebody who doesn't have, as we're talking here, maybe $30,000 saved up for a future family. That's kind of an idea. But it is something that we should start to resurrect, making our children aware of the responsibilities they have to raise and care for a family. And part of that is it does take financial responsibilities. It takes money to care for a family. And so if a person is going to show that they are responsible, if they are a good spouse, then this is a very good aspect of it. If a person has been saving their money, if a person has been able to be frugal, they then will show this as character that somebody can trust. So I think it's something like it's not a dogmatic, legalistic kind of an idea, but I think it definitely deserves to be resurrected, this cultural idea of the dowry. And I think that it's something that if we can do this within the Christian circles, we can put the right connotation and understanding of what it means to be a responsible adult. And as the New Testament says, Christians are supposed to take care of their own. That takes money. If a young woman is looking for a man, one of the concepts is, will he and can he provide financially for me and my children? As a father, I can tell you, any young man looking to marry into my family with my daughters, that will be a question I will ask as well. Once again, not dogmatically, not legalistically, but these things come down to one of seeing if a person is responsible. And I think that the concept of the dowry does assist with showing us the character of a person. And as I said before with my own self, I did not fit the bill that we're talking about here, nor was I taught such a concept or its importance. But what it did do is I did have a very good sense of work ethic. I did have a very good sense of ability to work hard, responsibility. And then as time came on, and as I grew in the faith, the concept of savings and then my responsibilities also grew as well. And so for now, I have a wife. We have 11 children. We have our own home, which is paid off. We have no debts. And we have our own business that we run as well. And so the concept of the dowry, I think, is something we should resurrect. I think that is something that young men in particular should be advocated that they should move towards, just to show that they are responsible and to give them a sense of their duties as a father and husband. Now, I talked a little bit about the dowry itself. As I said before, I think the listener should look into it as far as the concept of what is in the Bible. You'll find that it isn't overly spelled out, although it is definitely talked about quite a bit in the Bible. And the basic concept is the care and responsibility of a husband to show that he is responsible, just like in the case of Isaac, where he gave gold necklaces and rings and bracelets and other things to Rebekah. This was showing that he could care for a wife, could care for a family, and would make a potential good husband in the fact of provision. And that's something that in the family definitely needs to be resurrected, because it is a vital responsibility, specifically of husbands in the family. Let's move on then, of course, to the concept of David. It kind of goes with also along with the idea, as we were learning here, that David liked the idea of getting married. He liked the idea of marrying into the king's family, as we found out in 1 Samuel. Problem was, of course, he didn't have the money. He didn't have a dowry sufficient to marry inside the king's family. And as we're talking about here, this is kind of the idea we're talking about, the cultural idea that a man had to show his responsibility through his financial status. And I think that's a very good way of showing that. But the Bible clearly does show that here and other places. Now, King Saul had a ulterior motive, which I thought was actually quite interesting. In our story at our school, we're teaching the story of King David, where he, with Bathsheba, he killed Uriah by sending him into battle, and the Philistines killed him. Now, if you notice in this passage here in 1 Samuel, King Saul was trying to do the exact same thing to David. He tried to do it for a very long time. I found it very interesting that David utilized the same tactics as King Saul did whenever he had a problematic person that he wanted to get rid of. In other words, the killing of your enemy by the hand of someone else. In this case, both of them were trying to use the Philistines to kill someone. King Saul did not succeed, where David did. I found it just to be an interesting side note and concept that apparently David knew what was going on at this time, and later on he utilized the same tactics to murder Uriah later in the future with Bathsheba in that situation. But to move on here into the next concept, which is the present of foreskins, and this is the part which I found to be very interesting, because I know that most people would put their focus on David. They would put their focus on King Saul, maybe on the daughters of King Saul and how they were, you know, their father was looking for a husband for them. David, of course, was the conqueror. He was the hero. He was the great warrior. They're singing songs about him. He was a celebrity, David was. But he still, even with this celebrity status, still had to show his ability to financially care for a wife. And that's where the dowry came in. But he was relieved he was whenever the king said, well, I don't want money. What I do want is I want you to destroy my enemies and to prove that by bringing me their foreskins. Now, as the listener, hopefully you understand what this means. It means circumcision. This means just like the Old Testament circumcision. Where they would remove the foreskin, of course, of the man's private areas. Now, this means that, and I found this to be very humorous, I was having this conversation one time with somebody, because David's men also participated in this. It was not just David. King Saul requested 100 foreskins, and that would be the price that he was looking for. That was what he was looking to have brought to him to show that David was a responsible man worthy of marrying into his family. So in the place of a financial dowry, he was looking for a down payment in foreskins, which in and of itself is a pretty morbid concept and a pretty morbid idea. But if you're ever teaching this idea, have you ever thought about the concept of the soldiers, David's men? These were the men that followed David. Now, they, of course, idolized David. These men did. He was the conqueror of Goliath. And he was their captain, brought him in, brought him out. He safely went to war constantly. So they're very faithful to him. But being faithful to a person and fighting is one thing. But whenever David came to his men, and I wonder if you can picture this for a second. David coming to his men and saying, okay, men, I have a wonderful news. And of course, the guys say, well, what is this wonderful news? And the news, of course, he says, well, I talked to the king's men. And the king says, he wants me to marry his daughter. And of course, you can hear them say, well, that's wonderful. That's amazing. I think you deserve it. After all, the daughters of the king are very pretty, and that's a wonderful status to be marrying a princess, is what you're going to be doing. I think that is absolutely wonderful. But now, what is it that he wants from you? What kind of dowry? And you can just see David and just go, well, he doesn't want money. And, well, what does he want? Well, he wants me to go fight, as we have done before with the Philistines, and he wants 100 Philistine foreskins. You know, that's what he said. That's what I want. And you can see the men's faces. I mean, I can see if somebody told me that, it would be quite shocking. It's one thing to go out and fight your enemies, and especially in the Old Testament times in particular, there was quite a bit of warring going on, so it wasn't that it was something they were uncommon to. The Israelites were always at war with the Philistines, so going to battle, fighting was not uncommon for them. But the concept of after you've slain your enemy, to then have to circumcise your enemy is a whole nother degree. So could you imagine the men as they are explaining this stuff? And then he says, no, not only am I going to do it, but I want your help. So I want you to come with me, and I want your help. We're going to fight the Philistines again, as we've done before. And this time, once they're dead, we need to circumcise them, put in a bag, and bring it to the king. I mean, I just don't know how David could actually come to the guys and say this with a straight face. Maybe it's a cultural thing. Maybe it really wasn't a big deal to them. But for me, listening to the story, me having as a teacher told the story to people like my children, it was very interesting to see their faces as they heard what I was telling them that they were going to have to do. Because, of course, at this point, they knew what circumcision was. So here we are talking to them and explaining the story. And so David comes in and tells the men, okay, men, we're going to go fight. And the men say, okay, we're going to go fight. And now we're going to fight them. We're going to kill them all. Okay, we're going to kill them all. And I want not 100, I want 200. Okay, we're going to get out there, David. We're going to help you kill these Philistines, no problem. And then when we're done, David tells his men, we're going to pull down their pants and we're going to circumcise them. And we're going to save it. We're going to stick it into a little bag. We're going to bring it back to the king. That's what we're going to do. And I'm not sure if you could picture that, but for me, I find it to be unsettling and humorous to see what somebody's face would look like as men. Because like I said, it's one thing to fight your enemy. It's another thing, after they're dead, to pull out a knife, pull down their pants, and circumcise your enemies. And you have to ask yourself the question, who's responsible for carrying the bag? You know, who's going to carry the, is David carrying the bag? Is he the one carrying the foreskins back to the king? I mean, it's pretty gross to stop and think about this. It's kind of very morbid in a lot of ways. And like I said, maybe culturally it was different, but for me, I can't picture the concept. And I've seen the faces of my children as I've told this story before, and they were disturbed. They were disturbed, to say the least, about the concept itself. I found it rather humorous. But as the story goes on, David goes out. He doesn't kill just 100 of them. He kills 200. And so he went above and beyond in his concept of the dowry. So that means if somebody, as we're talking about this idea of the dowry, some people have an aversion to the concept of a dowry. Some people have an aversion to families looking at prospective young men to marry their daughters and looking at this concept of a financial situation, and they seem to be affronted by it, insulted by it, instead of privileged by it, instead of an opportunity to show what they're capable of, that they are a good choice, a good prospect. And getting a wife from the Lord is a wonderful thing, and any young man should be eager to find himself a good wife. It's the second part of himself that's missing. And in the case of David, he was very eager, and it just shows itself here. Not only did he do this very different, rare, and I would say morbid task of killing his enemies and bringing back their foreskins once they were done, but he not only did it twofold. He not only killed 100, he killed 200. So you kind of have to put yourself in the place of these characters. If you're teaching, if you're a parent, if you're a teacher and you're teaching these kinds of concepts, what is it that motivates David? What is it that he wants? Here in the concept is very simple. He wants to get married. So many young people today just are not eager to get married. I think times have changed. I'm not quite sure what the problem is, but they all seem to be more than content in waiting. If you notice, David in this passage was not eager to wait. He wanted to get married. In fact, the only thing that was really delaying him was the concept he didn't have the financial proof to show that he was capable at this moment of caring for a wife, at least what the king might ask for as far as the dowry was concerned. But he wanted to get married. And so that right there, that motivation, I think is missing in our young people. I think that the fervor is missing as well. I mean, here was a guy willing to go out there and kill and fight and potentially die in battle to not only kill 100 men, but 200 men. And then, of course, is willing to do the very grisly task of, as I said before, it's pretty graphic, but pulling down the pants of his enemies and circumcising them after they were dead and carrying back this bag of foreskins as a present for the king. But also, you have to ask yourself the question, and that's why I say these things are somewhat humorous throughout the Bible, these Bible stories, and you kind of have to really think about it. What were the men thinking as they marched out to do this? I mean, you can see the battlefield. I mean, you've seen films of battlefields like Braveheart and other grisly battles where people are dead laying all over the ground. But then they go through and start pulling down the pants of all these people and circumcising them and collecting them. And of course, you have to ask yourself the question, who's going to double check the count? I mean, really, who's going to check the count? I mean, is David going to check the count? Is one of his men going to have the grisly job of pulling them out one by one and taking count to see that they have the right number? When they bring them back, whoever is carrying the bag, who do they give it to? I mean, who does the king, does he bring it right into the throne room where the king is at and they dump it onto a table? Does somebody take count of it? I mean, all these things are pretty humorous, and you have to stop and ask yourselves to really flesh out the story itself when you're teaching it as a parent or as a Bible teacher in particular, depending on, of course, the age group that you're dealing with. Everything should be age appropriate. A lot of times this concept of circumcision of this story will be glossed over with younger students that won't really understand the concept. And as older ones, you might want to develop it. But as I said, I had to tell the story to my children, and to their shocked faces, they were completely baffled the fact that this would happen. And so as we were talking about it, it made me think more, which was a reason why I chose it for That's What He Said. Because can you imagine when that's what David says about King Saul? He's talking to his men and saying, he wants foreskins. That's what he said. That's what he said. And can you imagine the men going to each other in their camp? I mean, these are soldiers. These are battle-hardened men. And they say, we're going to go out and fight. Okay. We're going to go out and kill some Philistines. Okay. And then we're going to circumcise them and bring it back to the king. What? No. That's what he said. That's what David said. That's what he said. That's what we're going to do. Could you imagine the men talking amongst themselves in the camp about this concept and then going out there and doing it? I mean, the scene itself, if you stop and picture the whole concept in the scene, not only is it humorous, it's rather grisly as well. But it happens. David does it. His men assist him with it. They bring him back. He gets married. And of course, this is what causes great fear on the part of King Saul, because David did accomplish the task that was meant to be his end. The king was trying to kill him. But David succeeded. And of course, the rest is history as far as Bible stories are concerned and things like that. But anyways, I thought this was, for me, a little-known tale, and specifically the mindset of the men. They're only briefly mentioned that David and his men go do this, but nobody stops and fleshes out the concept, sorry for the pun, about the present of foreskins and the men who are going to go help him do this, their dedication to David, and how much, of course, they were going to follow him pretty much into whatever. And later on, of course, when he's running from the king, he does, of course, have many men who come and follow him again. So he apparently was a man who could elicit the response in others as a leader. But hopefully this is giving you some idea about this concept of that's what he said. Because throughout the Bible, that's what happens. People are saying things and doing things. But to be there, to live it, to be told it, to be a person who has to enact whatever it is that's being asked of you, in this case, the men of David being asked to assist him in his duties of trying to get a dowry to marry into the king's family. And of course, the price was not money. The price was to be brave, to be valiant, to be courageous, and of course, a little morbid, to circumcise your enemies and bring back a present of foreskins. So I want to thank everybody for joining me again. I do think that we need to think of these concepts, the concept of the dowry. If you are a father or mother and you're listening to this, I think we do need to think of the idea of teaching our children the responsibilities. Our young girls, our young daughters should not get caught up in the concept of emotional love only, but they need to find a young man who is responsible, somebody who's going to care for them and their children financially. As the Bible says, he that does not care for his own is worse than an infidel and is denied the faith. That takes money. Now, once again, as I said before, the concept is not concrete. The concept is not hard and fast in the Bible. But the general principle is clearly backed up all throughout the Bible itself. And, of course, the New Testament backs it up with a man's responsibility to care financially for his responsibilities of his wife and his children and so on. So the concept of dowry is something that needs to be resurrected. The concept of a love-only, emotional ties kind of concept needs to be rejected. Biblically, I think it's very simple to reject that kind of an idea, to say that money is not an important factor when we're talking about things, to say that debts are not an important factor whenever your children are looking at a prospective spouse. I think that is folly, and I think it's not backed up by the Bible. However, I do say you should read for yourself. And that's why these podcasts are what they are. They're podcasts. They are meant to make you think, point out things you may not have thought of before. But as for me and my children personally, I think it's very important to teach you young girls what type of characteristics and traits to look in for young men that are prospective spouses, and for my boys. What is it that they themselves should be doing to make themselves attractive to a young lady? What is it that would make them attractive to a family, to a father and mother, who they're looking at my sons as a potential person to marry one of their daughters? What is it that they should be doing to be seen as a good prospect? And the concept of financial stability, frugalness, and the willingness to have savings and security is a very big aspect of that. And I think that the concept of dowry is very important. I like the idea of the 3 years' wages. And imagine if a family, they of course get married, and now they have 3 years' wages already buffered to work with, because of course the young man was responsible enough and frugal enough to save, ready for his family that's brand new. In fact, even in the Bible, they took off 1 year after they got married. I'm not going to pull up the passage right now, but how many people have the financial ability to take off a year after they've gotten married? Well, the reason why they could is because of cases like this, cases where people have been responsible and had the finances already saved up. So I do want to thank everybody who should join us today. I do think that the dowry system itself and the concept, even though it's not hard and fast, deserves to be resurrected within our Christian communities, as it gives a new emphasis and importance of the concept of responsibility of the men and women in marriage and the importance of caring for each other financially. I also think that we should read our Bible stories. And as a teacher or as a parent, if you're going to teach the Bible, think about the concepts. Think about the people that you're dealing with. Think about the situations that they're dealing with. Think about how it would be to be told the things that you're told. Or like I said, the concept of, what did he say? Well, that's what he said. We're going to go out and kill some Philistines, and we're going to circumcise them and bring back a bag. I mean, that's what he said. So I think you should find humor. I think you should find a little bit of entertainment in the Bible. But most of all, you should find education in the Bible. What are we supposed to learn from all this? And hopefully I've touched on some things that you were able to learn from all this. The importance of people wanting to get married and the concept of financial responsibility within marriage. So thanks again for joining us for That's What He Said. We'll have more episodes to come. You can find this episode and more on ChristianReconstruction101.com. So thank you for joining us, and God bless.